Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. About 120 years ago, the World's Fair opened in St. Louis, and for the next 7 months, our city became the center of the world. It was an event that attracted hundreds of thousands of people every day, and those visitors could very well have been hearing music like this. That music was played by a group called the Philippine Constabulary Band. And as hard as it might be to believe, this was, at the time, pop music. And this band, according to newspaper reports, they were the single most popular musical act at the entire fair. This song, La Sampaguita, was recorded by the Philippine Constabulary Band several years after the fair, and that piccolo carrying the melody is being played by a Filipino musician named Pedro Navarro. In 1904, he had been at the fair in St. Louis. Like other visitors, he would have been exposed to wonders of the future, early electricity, radio, even attempts at flight. It was truly a world's fair. Every country was represented, and Navarro, like other visitors from overseas, was here to make his nation proud. The fair covered an area of almost 2 miles. There were palaces dedicated to agriculture and metalworking and mining, with awards given to the best displays. But the reason I'm talking with you about Pedro Navarro and playing some music from more than 100 years ago is because his story is part of a larger one, a part of the World's Fair legacy that this region is still only starting to recognize publicly. And here to talk with me about the Philippine Constabulary Band and what their presence here in St. Louis represented is Mary Talusan Lakanlali, an ethnomusicologist at California State University and the author of Instruments of Empire. She is also the great-granddaughter of Pedro Navarro, the first Filipino conductor of the Philippine Constabulary Band. Mary, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me, Elaine. I'm excited to be here.
Mary, I should mention, first off, that Navarro was among about 1,200 Filipinos at the fair in 1904. Many of them were not band members, but actually put on display in something called the Philippine Village, that was essentially a human zoo that supposedly showed native peoples in their natural, quote, savage environment. So we're going to talk about that later, but I want to first talk, Mary, about the Philippine Constabulary Band and your ancestor, Pedro Navarro. I understand that you never met your grandfather in person. How is it that you got to know him, Mary?
Yes, that's right. My great-grandfather died in 1951 when my mother was 6 years old. So no, I never met him. But the reason that I know so much about him was that my grandmother, that's my mother's mother, she would come to visit us every other year in Boston. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and really had very little connection to the Philippines or Filipino culture. So it was a real treat that my grandmother would travel from the Philippines and comes to stay with us for a few months at a time. And she always had this story. I was just a teenager in the 80s, and I'd come home from school, and she would just start on her story about her father. Mm-hmm. And she would always point a finger up in the air and say, "My father was a famous band conductor." And that's when I knew that I had about 30 minutes or so of listening to the same story.
Sure.
But it was such a treat, and also in some ways really confusing. As far as I knew, there wasn't much talk or knowledge about Filipinos or the Philippines where I grew up in the suburbs of Boston. So it was really surprising that she would say things like he was part of this famous Philippine band and that they traveled all over the United States, not just at the St. Louis World's Fair, but for several years after that, they would come back to the States and travel from New York to San Francisco. And that was really surprising to me because I knew how difficult it was to immigrate to the U.S. And so she would say that he was a famous band conductor. He met John Philip Sousa, who's, you know, the most famous American composer, conductor of brass band music, and that he had met the president of the United States, which at the time was President Taft. So it was just incredibly, almost unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got to know him, that he, through her stories about him. I didn't believe them as a teenager, but later on in grad school, I did some research, and surprisingly, her stories were true, mm-hmm. that he was this a famous conductor, that he was with a famous band, and they traveled all over the U.S. and marched at the inauguration of a president.
And as far as this great-grandfather's early life, you know, obviously what your grandmother was telling you was limited to what she could share. But how is it that you came to learn about your great-grandfather's early life and his musical training in particular?
Yes, so luckily there was a Philippine author at the time who wrote about Filipino music back in 1922, and he had 4 pages of a biography about my great-grandfather, and it was clear that he had met my great-grandfather and asked him all these questions. So from that book published in 1922, I learned that my grandfather, from an early age, came from the northern Philippines and went to Manila at about the age of 5 and was raised there in a convent called St. Augustine that was, you know, directed by Spanish priests. Mm-hmm. And they knew that he was a gifted musician right away. He would sing. And from there, he was just raised in that convent until he was 19 years old. And he studied with not only the Spanish priests who were musicians, but also a famous Filipino composer named Marcelo Adunay. So I think what that told me was that he had rigorous training from an early age in European music, particularly music of the church.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to fast forward now to the 1904 World's Fair. Mary, can you help us understand, you know, what the World's Fair in 1904 represented for someone from the Philippines, and how it was, or why, your great-grandfather traveled to St. Louis?
Right. So I think, you know, a lot of the Filipinos, especially the indigenous people, had no idea what they were getting into, and, you know, how far really the United States was from the Philippines, and, you know, how long they would be there. For my great-grandfather, he was already part of the Philippine Constabulary Band, which formed just a couple years earlier in 1902. Now, a really surprising and really great story about this is that it was founded and formed by an African-American officer named Lieutenant Walter H. Loving, and he was the only American conductor ever of the Philippine Constabulary Band, and he interviewed hundreds of the best musicians in the Philippines and selected about 82 of them to form the band in 1902. So when they came to the U.S. in 1904, they were quite well known in the Philippines. In fact, before they landed in the U.S., they went to Japan and played for the emperor. So they developed quite a reputation for themselves before they arrived in St. Louis. Now, in 1904, my great-grandfather was just a young man. He was 25 years old. And I'm sure everything was chaotic and new. In fact, the San Francisco Chronicle reported about how the Philippine Constabulary men just were in awe of all the big buildings and just in awe of their arrival to the U.S. So it would have been exciting to them, but also, you know, quite anxiety-producing. I'm sure there was a lot of fears about being away from home for so long mm-hmm. in a completely different country.
Right.
When they got to St. Louis, they went to the Philippine village, which was for the most part set up already, but they probably had no idea like how they were going to be represented there, what kinds of people, even people from the Philippines. They had no knowledge of all these diverse peoples and tribal groups and people from all over the Philippines. So that may have been as unfamiliar to them. There was no national language there, so there was a real language barrier between mm-hmm. the military men and all the different tribal peoples there.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was exciting, but also, you know, kind of scary.
Right, right. For the research that you did, Mary, did you visit St. Louis? And was there certain information that you wanted to get while you were here? And did you find it?
I did visit St. Louis, I think in 2019, a few years before my book was published and came out. And I was really excited because this was my first visit to St. Louis. I had been hearing for decades about the St. Louis World's Fair, and I was really excited to go visit the site of the Philippine village where my great-grandfather had spent, you know, 7 months of his life. Mm. But when I did go to several places, of course, the Missouri History Museum and the Missouri Historical Society Library and Research Center, and they were terrific. The exhibits were terrific, but no one could tell me exactly where the Philippine village was.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an idea it's somewhere over in this area, but, you know, not really. They couldn't give me sort of a place to go that I could just say, here it is, I found it. And so that kind of was a bit disappointing and concerning
mm-hmm.
That there was no sort of official site to which Filipinos could go to and visit. As a Filipino-American, we've all heard about the St. Louis World's Fair. It's almost the starting point mm-hmm. for us learning about our place and our history in the United States. And so that was a little bit concerning that at the time there was nothing there to commemorate the site.
Right. And when was it that you came to St. Louis to do some of that research that first time?
Yeah, I think it was in 2018 or 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really wanted to get the original materials that St. Louis did such a good job of archiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I did find a photo of my great-grandfather in the Philippine Constabulary Band, as well as other materials that I didn't have access to online or through other archives. So it was actually a really, really productive visit,
mm-hmm.
except for not being able to find the exact site of the Philippine village.
Right. Mary, what did that photo that you saw look like, and how did it feel to see that, especially after all of the stories that you heard from your grandmother and what you had learned from your research thus far?
Yeah, it was so exciting to see the original photo, because there are photos of that. It's on the cover of my book. And that photo is pretty famous of the Philippine Constabulary Band standing in the archway of a stone building. But to see the original photo and to see a close-up of mm-hmm. my great-grandfather's face was just so exciting. He was the only piccolo player in the band, and he was standing in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Loving, who was the conductor, was right in the middle. So he was in the front row holding his piccolo, and just to see him staring back at me in this original photo was so exciting. It brought my grandmother's stories and all of my research full circle to just be able to hold this photograph of my in my hand of him. And it was so clear. I could really see his facial features. And it was just really, really exciting to see.
Mary, what is it that you learned about this band that your great-grandfather was part of, the Philippine Constabulary Band, and how they were received at the 1904 World's Fair? And in particular, what did you learn about why the group was so popular?
Yes, it was really, really exciting and encouraging to hear that they were so beloved and sought after by the American public because, I had, through my research, heard about the very negative things that went on with the treatment of indigenous people. And not to say that this makes up for it in any way, but to learn that this was more complicated. Filipinos, particularly in the Philippine Constabulary Band, had such a positive and warm reception. The Philippine Scouts, who were also military men, but they were part of the U.S. Army, but they were Filipinos, also had a positive reception. To learn that they had so many musical successes was just really encouraging and really brought a new perspective to the Filipino experience at the fair. One of the most popular band pieces, of course, was Star Spangled Banner by John Philip Sousa. Mm-hmm. And through careful looking at all of the different programs, official programs of the fair, I learned that they played it the most times out of any group at the fair, including John Philip Sousa's own group. So to me, there was something special about the Philippine Constabulary Band. Why was it that out of all the different concerts going on in a given day, people would flock to their concerts? They were playing the same music as other brass bands. There were, definitely standards that everyone played. Sousa marches. Wagner was a popular composer whose pieces were played often. Why was it that people flocked in particular to their concert? And I had to think really about, as an ethnomusicologist, the aesthetics of the way people play. So it's not just what they're playing, but how they're playing. And I think that the Filipino musicians brought their own sensibility and aesthetic to playing standards like Star Spangled Banner. Mm-hmm. So in that way, that kind of led me down this path of asking myself, how do people listen? How do they hear? Why do they want to hear Star Spangled Banner by the Philippine Constabulary Band versus another group? Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, there must be a way in which what they listen to is influenced by their understanding of the people that are playing.
Right. And I think that's a great place, actually, to take a very short break and pick up on that point to continue the conversation. We're discussing today the Philippine Constabulary Band and the Philippine Village that were used to promote a particular narrative about American power at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Mary Luctalusan Lakanlali, an ethnomusicologist at California State University and the author of Instruments of Empire. Her great-grandfather, Pedro Navarro, was part of the Philippine Constabulary Band that won acclaim and was used to assert American imperial dominance at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis. Now, Mary, before the break, we stopped at a really good segue point, and you were were talking about the understanding that people brought to their perception of the Philippine Constabulary Band. And that's, you know, how they heard their music. And you make an argument about imperialism. How did you reach that connection, Mary?
Yes, thank you. I wondered always why the Philippine Constabulary Band was so popular amongst other bands. In fact, John Philip Sousa, in the book The Greatest Expositions, said that he was amazed and that they were one of the best bands at the exposition. So I kind of concluded that despite the shared musical language of brass band music and marches, they must have brought a Filipino sensibility and aesthetic to the way that they were playing. The, you know, audience was would flock to their concerts, and not go to other concerts just to hear them. Mm-hmm. And I thought about this as a way, a different way of hearing, and I called it the imperial ear, because I think not only did the American audience enjoy the actual music, but they also had a sense of satisfaction in colonizing Filipinos. The Philippine village was all about, in a nutshell, proving to the American public that the U.S. made a right decision in colonizing the Philippines, because it was quite a debate whether the U.S. should colonize the Philippines or not. So in 1904, I think the Philippine village tried to make this argument that, look, despite their origins as tribal people, they can be made to be sort of civilized, assimilable colonial subjects. And I think the Philippine Constabulary Band was used to prove that point in a way that audiences enjoyed. While they were listening to these Filipino musicians play brass band music, they must have thought to themselves, and this is documented in the newspapers, of course, mm-hmm. that this is wonderful. Look at these tribal peoples that we uplifted and taught to be exceptional musicians. However, that conclusion came at the cost of actually understanding the history of the Philippines, and that we had had European music for some 300 years prior to the U.S. arriving on our shores, and that people like my great-grandfather had been studying it their whole lives. These men were the best musicians in the country, and there's just no way that in 2 years you can take, and this is, you know, quoted from the newspapers, a bunch of savages and turn them into these elite classical musicians. And so that's kind of the myth that people believed, and that's why I call it the imperial ear. They heard the Philippine Constabulary Band in a way that sort of satisfied their own need to see the U.S.'s success in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a Friday last month, I attended the unveiling of an historical marker in a park in Clayton. And in 1904, this site, which now sits on the campus of Concordia Seminary across the street from Caldi's, a coffee shop in the Daman neighborhood, was this 40-acre Philippine village. And here, visitors pay 25 cents, which is about $9.25 today, to watch what was advertised as the life of uncivilized, uncultured peoples, inferior in just about every way to the palaces of technology nearby. And there's nothing in that spot now but grass. However, a local artist, Jana Anonuevo Langholz, has spent years giving tours of the area and telling the story of the 17 Filipinos who died there.
In addition to these 17 lives, I also documented over 1,200 individuals from different regions across the Philippine Islands who made the arduous month-and-a-half-long journey by ship, then by train, to this very spot to participate in the events of the 1904 World's Fair. Many made that journey for some of the same reasons Filipinos do today, to work abroad and to bring money home to support their families. However, I don't believe any of those 1,200 people knew the full extent of tragedy and exploitation the 1904 World's Fair would bring.
That was Jana Ananuevo Langholz speaking last month at the dedication of an historical marker honoring the Philippine Village Historical Site. Now, Mary, you were at that event in Clayton, the unveiling of this memorial. What were you feeling during that event and in hearing Jana's words?
Yes, my mother and I flew out to attend the event, and even though we had only learned about it a couple of weeks earlier, we knew that this was one of the most important events that we would witness, because not only because of our family history and our ancestor that was actually there, but also for Filipinos across the United States who long for recognition and for acknowledgement of their participation and their in the history of this country. So it was quite emotional, and I think it was the beginning of a lot of healing. I really am grateful to Mayor Michelle Harris and all of the committees that helped to put this together, and of course to Jana Langholz, who just did a phenomenal job, not only as a researcher, but as an artist and an activist to make this happen. It was quite emotional.
Mm-hmm. Mary, as a descendant and as a researcher and scholar, how do you think that we should be commemorating something where there's not much left to build upon? And is there a better way to characterize it than to use a word like commemoration?
I think that this is a first step, and I would hope that others would participate and share their voices in contributing to what could bring about more healing, more recognition, more coming together of us as a society. I think that it was so brave to just be so truthful about what happened at the 1904 World's Fair with regard to Filipinos. And I think that other voices need to be heard to ask, what else can we do to bring about attention and healing? Because I think, you know, the truth can only make us stronger as a society.
Mm-hmm. Mary Talusan Lakanlali is an ethnomusicologist at California State University and the author of Instruments of Empire. Mary, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing some of the personal connections that you have to this.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.